You are listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and RadioReverb.com online. Welcome to the UK's only radio show about HIV and living a healthy life. It's the HIV Hour. On today's show, we feature a rundown of the latest news and talking points about living with HIV from the Brighton area and the world at large. Also information on Brighton's HIV organisations and some other events. Do email us at hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @HIV_hour and Instagram at @HIVHour. If you miss the show on a Thursday at 7 p.m, then you can listen again at 4 p.m. on Monday and at noon on Tuesday, or indeed catch up with an older show by going to the Listen Again page on RadioReverb.com.
Hello, everybody.
Hello there.
I had to do introduction differently every time, but it doesn't seem to work. So it's hello, good afternoon.
We're here again. It's not us again. Yes, it is. and don't worry, January's nearly over.
It is, yes. It's been a bit of a long month.
A bit of a long month, hasn't it been? Yes. I think after the Christmas period, it takes you a couple of weeks to get back into things and into a new year. And so, I've struggled. Where have you been, Josh? You know, it's just that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've hibernated quite a lot. I've kind of been, I mean, I don't particularly want to go out that much. So I've just kind of stayed in and potted about and moaned quite a lot.
Getting off your chest is always good.
I think a lot of people are like that. I think it's been Christmas is a big build up anyway, isn't it? And we're in such a weird time anyway at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think people have had enough and just want some sunshine and a bit of warmth.
It's been so chilly, hasn't it? It's been so cold and trying to keep warm and
How are you, David? Because you haven't been well, have you?
So I've been just recovering from having flu over Christmas and New Year. But yeah, the month thankfully seems to have gone a bit quick, but I'm glad it has actually. But yeah, I've been hibernating as well. I mean, it's I've had a nice warm bed and food in my tummy, so I can't really complain too much.
Exactly.
And your kittens have been keeping you warm.
Oh, they're delightful. Yeah. They are. They're little hot water bottles. I've got a little, the youngest one's called Astrid, and she was like curled up in my armpit this morning on the bed. Just like a little, gorgeous she was. purring away she was.
Hey, I purr away sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. If you stroke them right.
So we haven't got Stephen tonight, and I think Tony was meant to be on, but he's
he's running late, isn't he, Tony?
Yeah, so he might join us later, Molly. So So I hope everyone's okay at home and taking care in this cold weather.
Mm.
What have you been up to then with this week, Sue?
Well, I've had quite a sort of busy week so far. I went back to my roots, as the song from Odyssey goes. That's an old song, isn't it?
Going back to my roots.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I remember dancing on the dance floor to that one many occasions. But basically, I'm originally from, I'm a Newcastle girl. I'm born and bred in Newcastle. But basically what happened, I went up to Newcastle. I went up on the Sunday and we were doing our first live face-to-face talks with the Positive Voices Project. And it was an amazing, I remember coming into Newcastle station and I remember taking some pictures of all the Newcastle Bridge and it was quite, I felt really quite nostalgic. I haven't been there for so many years. And it was such a treat. I met one of the other speakers who's from the Northeast, and we've done some amazing work in one of the Catholic schools, and hopefully it's a start of building, in areas that need this information. And as I came back on Monday morning, I had an enormous trip back. Newcastle was fine, but it was just when I got into Victoria, something happened on the lines and all of the trains, I don't know whether you may have heard about it in Brighton, all the trains were cancelled all the lines. Obviously, there was obviously something happened on the line, and dare I say, I think we can imagine what was going on. All the electrics were turned off, unfortunately. So, without saying too much, and obviously everything was cancelled. I wasn't sure I was going to get back home, but I did in one piece. But yeah, that's been a big start of this week. So, what about yourself, David?
I had a little visit to see my in-laws, which was nice because that was we would have gone to see them on Boxing Day. They live in Portsmouth, which is where I lived before I came to Brighton. And then I had a little day trip up to London with our co-host Josh. For a clinical study, which is interesting, but a bit gruesome. Not gruesome. Just think, is there something that people don't often talk about? And perhaps they should. So I don't know if you want to talk about that now, Josh, or should we
talk about it? We'll talk about it after the song.
Why not? Yeah.
I'm still sat on a cushion.
You've got me. Oh, guys, you've got me all intrigued. I'm intrigued. Now, what the heck's going on? We'll get to know about it in a minute. But yeah.
Because on the alternate, because the HIV hour is every first and third Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. and it's repeated obviously in different times. But now I've got another show which is on the second and fourth Thursday, which is a house mix club mix called Josh Sharp Club Mix. So yeah, so I've been doing that and just don't know, just potting around, just hibernating. What's on the show? So we're gonna have stories tonight, aren't we? So we'll talk about them. We'll come back when we come back with the song. But we've got a few stories. I've got one from Russia, so I'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. How about you? Have you got one too?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing an update on. It's 2 years. I don't know whether you knew that. I'm sure you did, but it's 2 years since It's a Sin exploded on our television. So I'm just going to do a bit of an update. An interview done by thetab.com with the CEO of the Terence Higgins Trust, Ian Green. So that, just an update on that, yes.
Great. And we're just going to have some community news.
HIVR is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.
So Tony's just joined us, by the way. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Evening. Sorry, guys.
Oh, there's something. You look different, Tony. There's something different about you. I'm getting this different.
I've got loads of marks here and here, but I'm fully Botoxed, babe.
Well, you look about 10 years younger, love.
Oh, 10 years, 10 decades. The amount of Botox you put in me.
So we're coming back. So we're just going to do me and David went up to London because we're on this study. Is it CPAC study, David?
Yeah, I've got the flyer here, so I can read stuff out from that. So listeners, to get to the bottom of where Josh and I were last Wednesday, we volunteered to take part in the CPAC study, and that CPAC stands for the Screening and Early Detection to Prevent Anal Cancer. Now, for people that don't know, anal cancer is sort of connected to the HPV virus, which a lot of both men and women are exposed to in their lives. I think the surgeon was telling me that 95% of women and gay men have been exposed to it, and about 12% of heterosexual men, which is interesting in itself. HPV virus, I think, is related to the virus that causes cold sores and warts and things like that. It only lives on the skin. It's difficult to detect. It's one of the causes of cervical cancer, and as many listeners will know, that girls have been able to get the HPV vaccine for some years now, but it took 9 years of campaigning for the boys to get their vaccines, which is a shame, really. And fascinating, actually, because now that boys and up to the age of 45 of men can get the HPV vaccine now, but they will not know if it's been effective until the year 2080, because they've got to wait for those boys to get to the age of 50 and 60
to see if they're going to get the anal cancers that they're trying to prevent with the vaccine. Yeah, I mean, it's long-term thinking, but, you know, if it works, then that's fantastic, because obviously it will save an awful lot of cancer diagnoses. So Josh and I took part in a study. They recruited 1,000 men who have sex with men, all living with HIV, to give some blood tests and other tests, and including biopsies as well. So, yes. So that was interesting. but not together. We weren't in the same room at the same time, but we did have to sort of sit in a chair with our legs in stirrups while we're chatting away while somebody's taking samples of our bottom.
They were very good. They were very good. And Cam's in the surgeon. She's really passionate about it, and she was saying that. Like cervical cancer for women is mandatory, isn't it? Or is it mandatory? They want that to do with for men as well. So that,
yeah. Well, you're right. And there's that. It's advised that all women living with HIV are advised to have a cervical smear test every year, regardless of age. As before, a woman up to a certain age wouldn't have to have. I think it's 60 or 61, but it doesn't matter now. If you're HIV positive, yeah, so women, yeah, so it should be for men as well. It should be for men as well.
I think she was trying, that's what she was trying to get at, to so it becomes part of screening for gay men and probably.
Yeah, yeah. And part of the reason for this study was it's impractical to test every single gay man by doing biopsies and things, but they're trying to, you know, with the samples that they're taking from myself and Josh, they were obviously trying to match that with our blood samples to see if they could look at the sort of precancerous stages and see if there was a marker in the blood that showed that the HPV virus would be likely to cause cancer. So that way they can just do similar to other male cancers like prostate cancer. So they do I think it's a PSR blood test for prostate cancer, and if the blood test is a particular number, then it's likely to be cancerous. So they're trying to develop a tool that, by simply taking a bit of blood, is a lot better than sort of sitting in a chair and taking biopsies. Or at least, you know, a blood test will justify doing biopsies for further investigation into cancer. But yeah, it's all important about, I'm obviously living with HIV, we are more susceptible to certain types of cancer. So, you know, it's all important about living healthily and a normal life as possible with HIV. We have to perhaps take extra steps than other people would normally do to keep healthy. Yeah. So, just a bit like going to the dentist. You book your routine tests and get done.
Yeah, it was good. And Tamsin was saying that a lot of people they miss anal cancer because maybe people think it's polyp or what's the other things?
Warts and piles. Yeah.
But they miss it, so it's to get that early detection is really important. So we'll keep us. We're going to get Tamsin on the show to just.
Oh, that'd be interesting. That'd be great.
She's eager to come on. So. So that's our bottom posterior story.
Bottoms up, then. Bottoms up. Yeah. As people say. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Not at all. Not at all. It's good to get to the bottom of things.
Best to get to the bottom of it, isn't it?
Get to the bottom of the situation. Yeah.
So, Sue, you've got a story, have you?
Well, it is a bit of a sort of story. I don't know whether. It seems like a long time ago we had, you know, It's a Sin exploded onto Channel 4 in that amazing Russell T Davies series, which literally has been, you know, the impact of what's going on now because of that. And it, like I said, it's 2 years on. HIV Charity says It's a Sin had immeasurable impact on public perceptions. And it's said never before in the lifetime has a TV show had such a profound effect on people from all walks of life. Now, Ian Green, the standing CEO at the moment, he is due to leave at the end of February of the Town Seeking Trust. He done an interview with thetab.com. Never heard of this magazine before, thetab.com. And obviously just doing an update on it's a sin. And, you know, he goes on to say, you know, never in the lifetime have you experienced anything. You know, it's a sin. Premier just over 2 years ago on Channel 4 just said that. It's safe to say the show has had an immeasurable impact in destigmatization HIV within the outside of the LGBT plus community. Ian Green has said the tab about ongoing impact of its sin and everything he's had to say. We often think about the AIDS crisis from an American perspective. Therefore, this brutal, honest depiction of what happened here in the UK began to hit home. Families did burn their beds of their children and relatives that died from AIDS and related illness while excluding the dead's chosen families from the funeral. And Ian Green tells us the tab. I mean, Ian himself has been diagnosed with HIV for over 20 years, so he's actually got a personal sort of a thing about this, obviously, and hopefully we're going to hopefully get him on the show before his reign finishes at the end of February. But he continues to say that young gay men were forcibly outed and had to tell their family members they were gay and dying of AIDS at the same time. And while this was happening, the government did absolutely nothing but spread mass hysteria. Now, It's a Sin reflects on a time in history of our community that we must never forget and sparked such a needed national conversation about HIV 4 decades on from the first cases of HIV. We're working towards the significant possible goal of ending new cases by 2030. People living with HIV are now on effective treatment, and these are the messages we're still shouting about. We need to be shouting about constantly for people that hasn't heard that. You know, that message, you equals you. And it's a really great reflection. He talks about we must all play a part. And this is what I like. We all must play a part in tackling this by educating ourselves first and foremost, and then openly talking about what the virus means and act as a barrier that prevents many from getting tested and knowing their status. It's vital to remember that today, if someone tests positive for HIV, they're able to live a normal and fulfilling life thanks to the incredible advances of HIV medication. Now, obviously, one of the reasons he's done this interview and sort of looking over the impact that It's a Sin has had on our television screens is obviously as we go forward into HIV testing week from the 6th. February. So obviously this is an opportunity where, you know, we're literally searching communities that are not really testing as much as they should be. You know, National HIV Testing, we promote regular HIV testing, particularly from groups from most affected, including gay and bisexual men and black people from African ethnic and ethnicities, excuse me. It starts Monday the 6th of February. So it's just, you know, reflecting on It's a Sin and the importance that testing is still crucial if we want to be. And, you know, can you imagine, you know, if we could be the first country in the world to end all cases of HIV by 2030? And these are the messages we're taking into the classroom to make sure the young kids today or has got that information, guys, that we never had. And I know we didn't have that information at school. So it's important that our young generation, and we talk about It's a Sin, we talk about all the things that are happening and the progressive, you know, things that have happened with the medication and PrEP and all of that. So that's just really nice, you know, reflecting that in 2 years. It just seems like yesterday I sort of watched all of it in one go. I don't know about you guys, I watched one episode and couldn't put it down, as one would say. So, yeah, that's just a little bit about an update on an interview with It's a Sin.
It'd be interesting to see if they do a follow-up. I mean, whether they could do a follow-up to it. Whether that would work.
Yeah.
It was all based on real events, wasn't it? Within the writer Russell T. Davies's lifetime. Obviously, probably put some characters together or people. But, I mean, obviously, Jill was a real person and still is, in fact, one of the trustees of the Sussex Beacon.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I actually just finished on that. At one of Jill Naldo's book signing in London, they had some of the family members from one of the characters, the Welsh guy, you know, that lovely Welsh guy. Yeah. Do you remember that? And that he was based literally on a real story. And I met some of the family, which was so lovely. You know, and some of the stuff they're doing instilling in their sons and family members now. So that was really quite nice as well. So. Radio Reverb. Hi, if you've just tuned in, this is the HIV Hour on 97.2 FM, DAB. And online.com. You can always get us on our famous podcast. If you've missed a show, go on to see one of our podcasts. It'll keep you coming in for more. And we've got Tony's story. Tony, what you got for us?
Hi. So I was looking at UN AIDS, and it said the end of Mosaico vaccine trial must be a spur to deliver HIV treatment and prevention options to all who need them, says UNAIDS. So in Geneva on 23rd of January, the end of the Mosaico HIV vaccine trial must lead to a continued drive to innovate, as well as the urgency to ensure that proven HIV prevention and treatment options reach all who need them, says UNAIDS. Rapid programs against the HIV pandemic is possible if existing prevention treatment options are made available through their sharing technologies, expanding provision, and tackling barriers to access. The development and sharing of the long-acting prevention treatment options are also important to expand coverage. So, the disappointment of the vaccine trial further underlines the importance of rolling out available HIV treatment and prevention innovations, including oral PrEP, long-acting injectables, and the vaginal ring. Now, I know me and Sue have been talking about that, haven't we, last year. Said UNAIDS director Winnie Bayamia, the search for vaccine must continue, but it's important to remember that despite this setback, the world can still end AIDS by 2030 by developing all proven prevention and treatment options to all people who need them. What do we feel about this, guys? What do we feel?
Yeah, we were talking about the vagina ring sometime last year, weren't we? Which could be a game changer for women in certain parts of the world.
What do we think about the vaccine trials though? Do you think we'll see more of those come out, or do you think it's gonna be a case of the trials they're going to start getting slower and slower because of obviously money?
Well, there's always going to be something about money, isn't there?
Difficult. I mean, the cynic in me would say that, you know, drug companies are less likely to look at vaccines if they can produce medicines for life. But, you know, there are, you know, probably, you know, I'm not saying all companies are like that, but, you know, if you've got something like that can be treated with one pill a day for the next 40, 50, 60 years, at however much pound per pill, you've got, you know, a nice little income stream going. Mm-hmm. But also, if it's successful, and also with using not putting all our eggs in one basket, so using other different types of prevention methods and using treatment as prevention as well. If we can mop up HIV within the global community, then there will be zero new infections. So the need for a vaccine will become less and less, unless some kind of mutation or something changes within nature or the virus itself. So difficult one, really. I mean, it would be obviously a vaccine would be no good for any of us who are living with HIV presently, But obviously it would, you know, stop an awful lot of people from having to go through some of the things that we've had to go through in our lives. Well, having said that, treatment is very successful now and almost a negligible impact on our lives. But, yeah, it's a difficult one, really. I would love to see more trials, but again, you know, is it economically viable to
get
HIV compared to the cost of treating it? As patents obviously expire as well, the cost of drugs like Truvada and that have plummeted since it's come out of patent. So you know, it can reduce for pennies now instead of pounds. So discuss.
No, but vaccines, you know, new vaccines come along, you have to try these new ones, don't you? And they don't work, do they? And they have to
go in. It's a tricky virus to do a vaccine for. I remember reading something, I can't remember why, but, you know, they can't do the same approach as they did with COVID for some reason, and I really should know what I'm talking about. But it's different to the COVID family of viruses or the coronaviruses. So, but they have learned a lot from doing the coronavirus vaccine, which they can apply to the HIV vaccine. But HIV, you know, hides inside the cells that are supposed to kill it.
We've got over 16 strains, haven't we? There's over 16 strains of, HIVs. So it's quite complicated when we're trying to find.
And I think it constantly mutates, doesn't it? So it's, I have a drug resistant strain because I wasn't adherent to one of my combinations once upon a time. So it almost mutates for every person that it moves into, doesn't it? It sort of seems to fit the immune system of whoever it infects. So it's a tricky little devil.
I think it disguises itself as sugars, doesn't it? Protein, sugar.
You know more than I do, thankfully.
I read that somewhere. Yeah, it's one to watch all these.
That vaccine trial failed, but I mean, I think
we've got to keep going.
We really appreciate what you're doing, but keep doing it. Mm-hmm.
In fact, one young person asked me the other day when I was in the Northeast, and one of the questions was, well, do you think we'll ever find a cure? And I had to be absolutely honest. I said, in my lifetime, maybe not. In your lifetime, probably. And that was a really sitting on the fence, saying not no and not yes. Do you know what I mean?
What do you think, Tony?
I think same as Sue. I don't think it's going to be in my lifetime. I don't think we'll. It is cynical because the technology has come so far with regards to treatment and prevention now. I mean, who'd have thought of PrEP 20 years ago, and PEP? Do you know what I mean? I don't think it'll be in my lifetime. But I think that all the work they do in our lifetime improves the lives of those for the who future. Are affected by it in the future. I've been positive for 25 years now, and I can remember when I first had my first treatment. Oh my god, wow, I thought the world was coming out of every bit. And I think, you know, we've come so far forward, haven't we, with everything, even, you know, our tolerance towards our medication. And I guess to a certain extent, the tolerance and stigma has been reduced, I guess. Not enough, but so I don't know. Yeah, I just think we've all the work they've done in our lifetime is going to help the generations going forward, and all the kids that are born with HIV, the people in third world countries that have HIV that are continuing to have kids that are positive as well. I think it's just paying that forward and making sure that they have the best chance of survival.
Absolutely.
It's really interesting now, because that's leading on to my story. That was a very good lead. You didn't know.
I was thinking that. That was a good segue. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. My story is from the Indian Express, and it's from Russia, actually. It's why HIV-positive teens in Russia are refusing treatment. So in Russia, it is now mainly adults who are infected with HIV. The proportion of young people among all those newly infected with HIV has fallen over the few years. So this is when the three of us were, this is from an 18-year-old called Marina Nikitino, I think it is. So she says, when the three of us were between 7 and 8 years old, her adoptive mother said she had to tell, she had two secrets. The first was that they were adopted, and the second was to be revealed when they grow up. So then when they grew up, her and her siblings, they learned that they were HIV positive. Until age 7, they were given some bitter syrup 3 times a day and 5 to 6 pills to swallow later. We were allowed to just take one pill, she says. Nikitina, who's from the eastern city of Kazan, is one of some 10,000 Russian youngsters between 15 and 20 years of age who became infected with HIV while in their mother's wombs. After giving birth to her, that her mother abandoned her at the hospital. The baby then spent 4 years, in a children's clinic for infectious diseases. In Russia, it is now mainly adults who are infected with HIV. The proportion of young people among all those newly infected with HIV has fallen. In 2021, the age group of 15 to 22-year-olds represented 0.8% of new infections. In contrast, in 2010, 2.2%. And in 2000, the proportion was as high as 24.7%. So it's gone down a lot, hasn't it? In 2021... over 13,000 children were born to HIV-positive mothers in the Russian Federation. Only 146 infants, around 1.1%, contracted the virus from their mothers. Fortunately, the figure is declining as pregnant women with HIV are entitled to free therapy to control the infection. People who are HIV-positive receive medical care in various regions. Age centres across the country. These, however, rarely offer programmes or psychologists that specifically cater for infected teenagers. Marina remembers how everyone at the children's clinic avoided her. We were given no normal tableware, no toys. They had to wear pyjamas with AIDS emblazoned in red letters on the backs. She says one day volunteers showed up. Among them was the woman who would later adopt her, which is lovely. Age 17, she stopped taking her medication to control the HIV infection. There were mounting problems at school and in her family, she says. Her father and brother began drinking, and she went through a very difficult year and forgot to take the pills and felt totally lost. Now she's resumed her therapy, HIV therapy. She understands that you cannot pause taking this medication. Now I'll get this right. Kushnia, who is... works at the Joint United Nations Programme on HIV and AIDS. That's UNAIDS, isn't it? Says it's very problematic when teenagers stop taking the medicine out of protest. The medicine must be taken every day at the exact same time, as we know. She thinks it would be better to inject teenagers, so that's interesting with the injectables coming on, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
So that's another way of looking at it, yeah. I thought, when I read that. Since the form of administration, the drug proves effective for months. So she also says some teenagers suffer unpleasant side effects from HIV therapies, whereas others temporarily stop their pills just to see how they might feel. It's quite difficult, isn't it, when you're that young to know you're going to be taking tablets for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's from when they're born as well, isn't it?
So,
Oh, to be at a nursery school with AIDS embroidered onto the back of your shirt. That's awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awful. And that stigma stays with you for life, I imagine, and stigma of being an orphan as well.
Yeah.
And then going through your teenage years, which are difficult no matter what a generation it is. You know, it's always difficult being a teenager, isn't it, and exploring relationships. Yeah. And, you know, do you hide your status, or are you out there about it? And if you're out there about it, are other people's education enough to not stigmatize you? And yes, minefield. So yeah, injectables might be a good option for them. Yeah, especially because now the injectables are getting better, aren't they? Or the longer lasting. So instead of every 2 months now, there's ones that are for every 3 months? And well, you know a lot more about this than I do, Josh. I mean, what's your experience and knowledge?
I think Gilead said they're trying to get it for a 6 month trial, six months. Wow. I think so. That's obviously in early stages of
wow.
It's like Anil. It's like when you're a teen, it's hard enough as a teen, isn't it?
Yes.
But one of the psychologists from Kazan said that some are so sad and depressed and suicidal because they can't live like other teens. So,
Well, it's sad that they think that they can't. I mean, they can, but for some reasons, obviously, they can't. But they should be able to live like any other teens. But that's difficult enough in itself, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, my heart goes out to them, and I wish them all the best.
Yeah. Radio Reverb.
97.2. That's me, isn't it? Welcome back to the HIV Hour. It's 97.2 FM, and we're in the Brighton area. And yes, there you go. And now we've got some community news. Off you pop. You've got some good news, Tony, haven't you?
Got some gorgeous news. So as well as doing weekly meetings, we're now decided at the Worthing Hub we're going to do a event per month, which is good. That's on top of the meetings. So on the 18th of February, we're going to be bowling. We're going to go to bowling, and that's in Worthing. If anyone wants to join us, either message the HIV Hour on socials or email me at theworthinghub@gmail.com. We give you all the details. It's subsidised, so it's not going to be that much money. And, it's going to be just a really good, supportive crowd of people. And it's going to be lovely.
Tony, is that lawn bowling or 10-pin bowling?
10-pin, yeah, 10-pin bowling.
That's good. That's better for the weather, isn't it?
I know Worthing is particularly an older genre of people, but yeah, we're not quite lawn bowling.
I've done lawn bowling. I quite liked it. I mean,
there's the little balls. I like the big ones.
Away we go again.
So you are naughty. There's us trying to be good with community news. You're talking about loving big balls.
No, I'm quite. In fact, I might come along because I'm quite good at bowling.
Oh, good.
Come along. Everyone is welcome to come to bowling. Yes. 10-pin bowling.
Sounds good, Dad. When is it again, Tony? What's the date again?
It's going to be Saturday the 18th of February at the AM. Is it AMG or something? On the seafront.
On the seafront, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. But if they let us know, either let the HIV Hour message through socials or give me an email at theworthinghub@gmail.com, we can book you in. So, yeah, there's going to be quite a few of us, I think. I think we've got like 15, I think, hopefully going to come. So, yeah, it's going to be good. A few lanes, a good bit of competition. And a good
couple of teams going.
We love that. Yeah. Come on, guys. We could do an HIV Hour team, couldn't we? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think Peter
could do all the shining.
Go 10-pin bowling. So that might some of their members might be interested. So I hope some of them are listening to the show today. And if you're not, I'll try and remind you yourself.
So next week, on the 4th of February, I am DJing at the Bulldog, which is on St. James Street in Brighton, and it's for the Brighton Bear Weekend. Stop laughing, Sue.
I like bears. No.
Bears?
So it's men only at night, and it's for the Sussex Beacon and the Brighton Rainbow Fund. So I'll read what the thing is in GC. Two of the Brighton's gay venues will be running events to raise vital funds for local HIV charity, the Sussex Beacon, and the Brighton Rainbow Fund. And so on Saturday the 4th of February from 9 p.m, the Brighton Bear Weekend will be throwing it's called the Bears at the Bully Party. Yes, so that's at the Bulldog on St. James Street. Organisers say it is time for the bears to ease out of hibernation.
Ooh.
Help you with that. We're throwing a party at the new Bulldog. So I'll be playing music from 9 o'clock. There's 20% discount on drinks.
Oh.
It's a raffle as well. So
I'm there. If there's a raffle, I'm there.
I know.
Then only so. Oh, no.
So also, anyway, back to community news very quickly. there's also, this is not till the 23rd of February, Thursday at 8 p.m. There's a charity quizzing night, and this is for Sussex Beacon as well. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be £3 entry at the centre stage. So that's on the 23rd of February at 8 p.m. So if you fancy that and give money to Sussex Beacon, that'd be mm-hmm. fantastic. So okay. Also, we're coming to the end of the show, Sue, but this you were mentioning earlier.
We've got National HIV Testing Week from the 6th of February to the 12th. It's not just for one in particular charity, it's just a national, that means it's all around the country. And it's basically a reminder for people to go and get a test if they've never had a test before, or perhaps they haven't had a test for a while. It's a reminder, get to know your status, get yourself tested. So many different ways. You can visit the Jubilee Library in Brighton, the free test kits. You just put your date of birth and then you get a free test kit out of that machine. And so just really spreading the word. You're going to be seeing lots of amazing graphics around the city because there's been a new major campaign with some great images and messages on why it's a really good and positive thing to go and have a HIV test and to always know your status. So, this is a time, a reminder that, you know, don't sit on your laurels. If you haven't had a test for a while, you've just perhaps started a new relationship or just come out of a no one, you know, get yourself sorted out, get yourself tested, know your status, and, you know, peace of mind. You cannot pay for peace of mind. Just get it done. So, 6th of February to the 12th of February. Look on the website. You can go on to the Town so you can just website. We'll be testing throughout the city. We'll be testing in some of the saunas. But, you know, all of Brighton is all on board, as it always is. So no excuses. Get yourself
tested. Can general public use the testing machine in Amex? Can they go in and have that?
No.
As well as the library.
In the library?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, in the library, can absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Bella as well. Bella, isn't there? There's one and the sauna.
Yeah, in the sauna. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's one in the sauna, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I'm going to have to wrap you up now.
No.
I'm wrapping you up.
Okay.
To the end of the show. So, thank you very much for coming. That went fast, didn't it? Very quick.
Mm. Yeah. Bite me. I like your T-shirt, Josh. Bite me. Gosh. Are you going to wear that at the Bear Weekend?
So, if you want to contact the show, want to come on the show, want to have any ideas or want to be interviewed, want to, anything like that, just go to our email, which is hivhour@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter at @hiv_hour. Or Facebook, which is, if I can remember, at HIV Hour Reverb. So that'd be good. Or follow our podcasts, which is Deezer, iTunes, and Spotify. Just type in HIV Hour. That's it for tonight. Thank you for joining us. Take care, everyone. I hope you have a good week.
Yeah, and we'll see you all soon. Take care, everybody.
Cheerio. Bye.
HIV Hour is the UK's only show for people living with HIV, sharing stories, news and views on living positively with the virus.